So I've experienced sexual harassment, but in another industry. And, you know, it's funny today, I just want to share this. This morning I was talking to my husband about doing this podcast, and I admitted that to him that I was sexually harassed in the workplace, and he didn't know.
Mm.
And this is before I met him, and he was really shocked that I'd never shared this with him.
Mm.
And I said, but it's one of those things that every woman, I think, goes through, but they just, why air it? You know, you kind of deal with it in the time, and you kind of move on. And I feel like, as women, we've had to put up with that for a long time.
Hello, and a very warm welcome to the Asian Bookshelf, where we explore Southeast Asia's literary landscape. If you are a discerning reader, perhaps even an aspiring writer, you are in exactly the right place. We interview acclaimed writers and key industry figures to explore Southeast Asia's literature. And today, my co-host, writer T.A. Morton, and I, presenter Devika Misra, discuss a sensational sizzler of a book. Dirty Old Media Men reads very much like a tell-all exposé. It is set in a fictitious multimedia newsroom in Singapore.
This book was such a shocker. I can't believe it. I mean, I feel like from the title, maybe you should know what you're getting. But honestly, on reading this, my mouth was just open.
This is episode 9 of The Asian Bookshelf, and we discuss a fictional memoir. Written under a pseudonym, the author calls herself Millie Lee. Page 1 states that she works in the Singapore media industry and wishes to remain anonymous.
And then I asked her why she wanted to keep her identity a secret. And this kind of shocked me, why she wanted to do this, because, you know, obviously I thought, oh no, she's scared because she's working in the industry still. But the reason is because of her mother.
Mm-hmm.
That her mother doesn't know that she's written this book, but it's dedicated to her. And also because she just wants the book to do her own thing, and she doesn't want to be part of that media to do with the book, I guess. Well, it makes me think maybe she's a famous person. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. We shall just have to wait and see.
That's funny, though. And also, like, wouldn't a mother be... I mean, when I write my books, my mum's really proud. That's part of being a mother, right?
It's also coming from a different
culture. Yeah, I'm very sure.
Okay.
But the fact that, yeah, it also makes me think, like, maybe this mother, her mother, like, went through some of these things too. Maybe she was part of the industry too, and she's kind of writing this for her.
Definitely people in the industry don't want to be identified. And the people who I did talk to worked for one organization, and they quickly said, no, I don't think this is ours, and they pointed to a competitor.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah.
I love that.
So that was kind of funny.
I think there is some truth to the fact that self-censorship is a thing, and sometimes it's not because we want to follow some kind of country agenda or things like that. I think everyone do have a desire to do what's right for the public good. And how that looks is sometimes quite grey. Yeah, so I think I can share one example. We were out looking for people to speak to on the street, and we approached Singaporeans from all walks of life, and one person just happened to be transgender, and we only realised it halfway. And when we brought the interview back, and I told my supervisor that one of these people that we interviewed is transgender, my boss actually got a little bit scared, and he was like, did this person try to push transgender agenda? Did this person try to ask for rights and things like that? And it's like a fear of what could happen but didn't. So I just said, oh no, this person just acted like any Singaporean. And in the end, it made it to air. So it's really like a fear of what could happen rather than censoring for the sake of censoring kind of thing.
Millie Lee wins a scholarship from NTU, the Nanyang Technological University, which she does name, to work as a trainee journalist across online news, radio, and TV. And well, let me just say, off the bat, this book is a shocker. quite sad at one level and absolutely hilarious, laugh out loud funny at another. I also got a couple of views of other young women journalists in Singapore who also did not wish to be named. And they too have expressed a range of feelings, shock, of course, some skepticism, and they've shared their own opinions.
I feel that the media is a very big place, and it sounds to me like there can be a lot of individual experiences that will look very different. There are parts of the book that I instantly relate to, but there's also a lot of parts of the book that I actually scratch my head and like, really? This can happen?
A very fresh interpretation of sexual harassment that I feel very sadly that a lot of women still have to deal with in the workplace. It does showcase the difference of generations. There's even an older woman character who probably dealt with this all in the past, but is now too immune to it and very distant to the protagonist. It's kind of very Bridget Jones inspired with the diary, but it's different as Millie, the protagonist, is very self-aware. It kind of reads to me almost like this kind of post-Me Too book. And I mean that in the sense that we all know what happened. We all know what happened in the past. But it still happens, and it's almost like it's a result of how women are reacting now to the sexual harassment that still goes on in the workplace. And it kind of shows that nothing really has changed.
Millie Lee says local women haven't had a Me Too movement, and I did speak to a couple of other people about it.
Personally, I have not experienced any such an unpleasant experience. And for my team, actually, we are all women, so we don't really have that. But of course, on and off, you hear such examples, or, you know, like you hear some hush-hush stories about, you know, unverified reports of such things happening in the newsroom. But we just like, you know, okay, we take note of that. And sometimes when we read stories about it, you know, about some other newsrooms that have such incidents, it actually makes us like taken aback. It's like, I think in this time and age, we still have such, you know, harassment incidents happening. So yeah, so much for gender equality.
I can't speak for the entire industry, but just speaking from the point of view of someone who works in media, like I understand this person in this book experienced a lot of harassment within the company, but in my experience, I experience it more from outside the company because we meet with a lot of people. And I guess there may be a general sense that if you are from the media, you are probably more open-minded. They think like, oh, we can speak more openly about things that are flirty and things like that. So there is that element, but I'm not so sure it's confined within the industry.
If you look at the number of reporters, actually the print industry has quite a big number. So I'm not surprised if they have such incidents happening in that part of the industry. Yeah.
Having worked as a broadcast journalist myself, there is a lot that was familiar, but not the sexual harassment part.
Right.
So what I mean by that is I did recognize the move towards the integration of television, radio, print, and there's a reference to not having the face for TV. And I do recall it was a standing joke in the radio newsroom that we were the uglies. The uglies went into radio.
Oh,
I was kind of hoping that that would not be the case anymore. But apparently, according to Millie Lee, it still is. The other thing I recognized is the morning shows are supposed to be fun and funny and relaxed. But the DJs often get pulled up for saying something offensive in quotes. And the other familiar thing is that when editors cut a story because they think it's not appropriate, very often it mysteriously finds its way onto social media.
Right.
So there was a lot I recognized about this newsroom. But then there was a lot also that was absolutely like, oh, really?
Yeah.
And including the sexual harassment.
Mm. So I've experienced sexual harassment, but in another industry. And, you know, it's funny today, I just want to share this. This morning I was talking to my husband about doing this podcast, and I admitted that to him, that I was sexually harassed in the workplace. And he didn't know. And this is before I met him, and he was really shocked that I'd never shared this with him.
Mm.
And I said, but it's one of those things that every woman, I think, goes through, but they just, why air it? You know, you kind of deal with it in the time, and you kind of move on. And I feel like, as women, we've had to put up with that for a long time. And unfortunately, like, I mean, it's the male gaze too. I mean, she does this with such great humor, and it's a satire, and I get it completely. But there's still things, I mean, it's really sad that a lot of women reading this, and I'm scared for the younger women reading it, if they're still experiencing this kind of misogyny and this kind of male gaze that's looking over you.
Well, the way she describes it in the book is it's very normalized.
Yeah, which is scary, right?
Yeah, and almost have to think when you're working in that kind of fast-paced environment and you're trying to get ahead in your career, is it really harassment? Because there's innuendo, there's sexual advances, and there's those are more obvious, and there's harassment. So
no, but just like one of the characters is watching pornography, and everyone just knows about it, and you know, in the media organization that she's working in, and everyone just kind of puts up with it, and it's like, why is that? How is that okay?
Yeah, there are lots of issues here. I mean.
And that's, she really does it with such great humor. But that's when I'm talking about, like, when I sat there and reading it, and my mouth was just open, and I was thinking, oh my God, I cannot believe somebody's actually writing this about here.
So I wanted to actually ask you about the title, because the title says Dirty Old Media Men, Sexism and the City, a fictional memoir. But there's a lot more she tackles in the book, a lot more. Many serious issues. Cronyism, she talks
Absolutely.
About. Very
yeah.
funny with her boss who went to school with so-and-so, and that's why they did that story to cover his organization. I mean, so she covers that. She covers ecology. She covers news, sort of manipulation, giving news a gloss. So I'm wondering about this title. Do you think it's a little bit reductive? Do you think they've given too much emphasis to the sexual harassment part?
I love the title personally. I think that it appeals to women. I would pick this up purely because of this title, because I'd be like, what the hell is this? And, oh, what is that? What does she, does this really say? Like, is this really what it's going to be about? Which, you know, a lot of it is, but there's other things, as you say. I think it's refreshingly honest. And immediately you're kind of faced with these characters. They're real slap in the face, these perverts that she's dealing with. I actually mentioned this title to a group of young professionals that I was teaching last week. And I said, what do you guys think about this title? And they were like, you know what? That's a great title. Oh, wow. When's this book coming out? And I said, it's just coming out now. And they said, great. But there is, as you say, there's a lot more in this book. Different themes, different parts of society. I mean, it's a real satire on our modern ways of living.
There was something else that I was a little skeptical about, and so have some other journalists I spoke to been skeptical about. You know, she refers to the reason that she gave up the job. She's a trainee journalist, and she gives up the job saying, I want to feel legitimately wanted, referring to the assignments she's been given. Do you think her expectations were realistic? Do you think she's been a little naive? She's just not even a graduate.
Yeah.
What kind of assignments was she expecting?
I know, but this goes down to, I mean, when you talk to people of a certain generation, the older generation, they do seem to have issues with the younger generation that are coming through. And I've listened to a few people about this.
For us, I think the older generation of journalists and the young ones are quite different. We are made differently, I would say, because I'm in my early 40s. So I think my education and my experience is quite different from the young ones now because of my interaction with my interns and the younger generation of reporters. For example, when we want to interview the interns, one of the first few questions they ask, may I know what time do you get off work? Can I have Saturdays and Sundays off? Because I mean, I was a bit like taken aback when I interviewed these interns because we never ask these questions when it's our time to intern. But for myself, I feel that every work experience is valuable. So I think it's really a different generation now.
On some level, I do love my job a lot. It was uncomfortable to read about someone who's really struggling in the work, And I can kind of see why, because she was clearly in the training phase. So they may not have entrusted work that is more meaningful to her. She was really doing things that a lot of us start out doing very early in our career, and I have to say it's really a grind. It probably takes about 1-2 years before you get to do the stories you really want to do. And for my generation, which I won't disclose my age, but I think I'm beyond Gen Z, so we were all willing to accept that grind, thinking that we would do my stories one day, and it did happen. For this writer, I do feel 6 months is too short, and there could be something better if she had persisted.
I do feel like Millie coming, she has a scholarship. She's obviously very intelligent and she's self-aware. And I do think that girls like that, and I mean, I'm raising one myself, I do think they are very ambitious, fiercely ambitious, and rightly so. You know, this is their time. You know, we want them to be strong women. We want them to go out there and push the boundaries and to make the name and to, you know, wave the flag for the rest of us. And so I do feel like, honestly, like I'd be kind of pissed. You know, you've just spent like 4 years at university. Then you come into a job. You are very skilled. You have been taught the whole time, like you are very gifted. And then you come in and you're given these silly assignments. And she's more than that, obviously. She wants to write the big stories. She wants to give the big headlines, which she does get, you know, by chance.
I don't know if it's by chance or she's...
No, but
There's always this dilemma with Millie Lee, right? She's ambitious, as you say. And we do want the young women to be sort of pushing ahead with their careers. But in that pursuit, she gets burnt out with the compromises she makes. And in the end, she doesn't have a long-lasting, sustaining career. And I wonder if that's typical or... I mean, obviously, this is fictional. I think she exaggerated her sort of the attention she got, not in terms of the sexual harassment. I think she exaggerated her journalistic prowess, you know?
I mean, it is like a journal, though. So I guess she's her biggest fan, I would assume.
Yes.
So, of course, she's going to be, you know, waving the flag for herself, saying, hi, you know, I am capable.
Absolutely. I mean, this is very Bridget Jones, isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean, it's done. Even the probation is described day by day.
Yeah.
And she's this sort of describes herself as a hapless young working woman. But there are huge exaggerations. You know, firing somebody, Uncle Groper, he's called,
which is
a hilarious
just the names
name.
Of the guys
hilarious.
In this. Yeah.
Uncle Groper is made redundant in a very public way in front of the entire newsroom staff. I mean, this in Asia is not common, and I don't think in the West either.
No.
So there are odd things like that. But I wanted to ask you on a broader note, do you think any news organization, even in a culture where there might be complete media freedom, would you say news can be unbiased?
No. I have a political science background, so I feel like I've been conditioned to say no. I mean, there's always bias. I wish that we lived in that society. And I'm trying to think back to, was there ever a time that news was unbiased? Do you ever think that we had the media freedom? I mean, like, people would argue that the USA is unbiased and the UK, but that's, I don't believe that at all. I mean, just watching BBC compared to Sky News, Fox compared to CNN, everyone has coming with a bias.
I think when you choose the subjects that you're going to air, of course, there's a bias. But perhaps because there wasn't so much misinformation out there, you know, there were sort of trust, quote unquote, in quotes, trusted news sources. And definitely the BBC was one.
Mm.
Now that trust has really eroded.
That's not there.
Yeah. But I mean, I just love this book. Despite the, you know, very serious aspects, obviously sexual harassment, cronyism in the industry, information censorship. The thing for me was the comedy, her pithy irony, hilarious. I mean, bits of it really laugh out loud. And she'd have such funny little subtitles. The dancing durian story, the monkey interview.
Yeah.
Engelbert Humperdinck. And the social media comments that she transcribes that follow. I mean, the book has been, on the whole, a real treat for me as a woman, as a former radio journalist, and as someone who really laughs out loud.
No, me too. That's crazy, this book, that I also couldn't stop laughing at one point. I also just think that she just did it so well. I mean, I feel like this book it's well-paced. I didn't want to put it down because I wanted to see what was going to happen with Millie. I wanted to see if these horrible men were actually going to get, like, you know, we were going to get justice for those men, and they were going to get fired, which, you know, thankfully... Well, we probably gave away a spoiler, but yeah, one of them does, sorry.
But I just like to say here, not all the men
No, they're not.
Because they are quite nicely, they're fleshed out younger male characters. I thought she brings the nuances
of them
quite nicely.
Yeah, the different generations.
Yeah, everybody is not Uncle Groper.
Yeah, but I also really appreciated the way that she was showing how... media organizations go after stories and how they do want these, you know, this girl sunbathing and how that kind of, you know, they wanted to run with that and how scandalous that was that she was on the roof and she was in a bikini.
Yeah, the sensational.
Yeah, the whole sensational
aspect.
More
than the sensational, it's the going after the personal.
Yes.
People want personalized stories.
And don't you think that's a relatively kind of modern concept in the last probably like 15 years?
I know in India... Many years ago, the journalists never touched any personal aspect.
Yeah.
The scandals, that was just considered an absolute no-no, hitting below the belt. But now it seems like nothing's below the belt.
No, exactly. And then somebody will go make a TikTok about it, or they'll do like a reel and it will be about that person. And
so
that's what's
talking
funny.
Of TikTok, don't you think this would be a great show or a great movie?
Oh my God, yeah, it would be a great series. I'd watch it. I'd be so into it. I can't believe it has been picked up already. Like, well, I hope it has been, because I actually think this would just translate and it would shine another light on Singapore, one that's very different from Crazy Rich Asians.
Mm.
And I think it would also bring out how humorous Singaporeans are. And I feel like I've said this before, but I actually feel like people... here are very funny. They're very cynical and they don't really seem to understand that their humor would translate very well. They're very honest.
I think that you can see that from the memes. The memes during COVID were just hilarious.
Yeah, but exactly, right? They're so quick.
But Singaporeans tend to laugh online, not necessarily face-to-face.
Which she shows in the book, right? How much you laugh online. That's why this book's so funny.
Yes, Tracy, but my real issue with her is not the book. It's the fact that she wants to be so hidden. I mean, how many times did we try to get her on the show? How many people? We tried the publisher. We tried through you. How many emails did you send her?
Yeah. Well, that was more the publisher.
Yeah, but I kind of feel if you do a book like this and, you know, maybe you should put yourself out there.
So I did write her some questions. I asked her what inspired her to write Dirty Old Media Men. And she said, I wanted to write a Singaporean set satirical novel that was both playful and maybe a little provocative. I feel like she's really done that. It's more than even a little provocative. She thinks that there aren't many novels like this in Singapore, and she doesn't really understand why. The idea that we cannot laugh at ourselves is a myth, especially now. Our social media feeds are full of comedians and content creators mocking our way of life. And she wanted to create this kind of funny local version of having a contemporary satire. And she wanted to write a book to correct the tired misconception that young people do not read. She hopes that this book will bring them back to the bookstores and they'll read.
I hope that too.
Yeah. So I guess here she kind of balances out the kind of sexual harassment that women face through comedy, which is kind of similar to Bridget Jones, I would think. But she's not so obsessed with her weight and smoking and, yeah, all that, and drinking.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, I know. I also asked her, what messages or insights do you hope that readers gain from your book? And she said, if readers pick up a copy and simply read it, then we both won. First, we've pushed back against the myth that Singaporeans won't read books anymore. They will. We hope.
They will read this.
They will. Second, we've pushed back against the other myth that Singaporeans won't laugh at themselves. They do. And third, we would have shown that we can read satirical works that poke fun at some stubbornly persistent aspects of our society, like the patriarchy, the casual sexism, and misogyny. It's still out there. A guy has a couple of office flings, he's okay. A girl has a couple of office flings, she's a slut. Really? We're still okay with that? Can we at least talk about the contradiction? That's what I try to do in the novel. Yes, it's entirely fictional. Really? Is it, Millie? And I hope it makes the reader smile and maybe even chuckle on the bus.
We hope that you have enjoyed this episode of The Asian Bookshelf, episode 9, and perhaps have a somewhat different understanding about the news media and the people who bring you our daily stories. Coming up, we will have our last discussion this season about how one creates the kind of magic we talk about here, creating fiction from the perspective of a creative writing student and her teacher. What stories are being woven right now as we speak, and which exciting upcoming writer we should be looking out for. We'd love to hear from you at contact@theasianbookshelf.com or via Instagram. Many thanks for listening to The Asian Bookshelf, home to words and voices from Asia today.